Is this thing on? Take down that top knot, loosen that tie, close your laptop, and say goodbye to your email for the day. Let's go grab a drink and cheers. This is the Drinks After Work podcast, and I'm your host, Tiffany Callahan.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Drinks After Work podcast. Today, we're cheersing with Carly Chamberlick. Carly is a flight attendant, a photographer, and a brand strategist. And the story she shares today about how she navigated through each of these careers and all of the lessons she learned along the way are truly remarkable. We chat about her travels, the various countries she's lived in, and what being a flight attendant is really like, especially in the early days. And then how one of her trips sparked her curiosity about photography and branding, and how she basically bootstrapped her way to where she is today. We talk about finding the right mentors and coaches, how they'll help you grow your business, what personal branding is and how to get started with building a brand, how she runs online courses, and what some of her tips are for others looking to start these types of businesses. And then, as always, we finish off with a few fun rapid-fire questions. If you like this episode, I'd love it if you could leave it a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It really helps with getting stories like Carly's out there for others to listen to and learn from. And don't forget to follow the Drinks After Work podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Now, let's cheers to Carly.
You lived in Germany, France, India. You've traveled to 38 different countries, and that's kind of how you started to want to become a flight attendant. So why don't we start there? Talk about your flight attendant stuff so we can get that out of the way, and then we want to dive into like the whole creative side of your brain.
Yeah, perfect. I love that. And that's kind of, I feel like that's kind of a good picture of who I am too. I think anybody can get their head around like the role of a flight attendant. That makes sense. But then when you're like, I'm an entrepreneur and I do this and that and this and that, it's like wearing all the hats. So it can be confusing to describe. But I became a flight attendant for a major airline in the US, and we fly international and regional. So I started with them in 2018 and I was flying full time for them up until COVID hit. So literally I was in Costa Rica the first or second week of March. And then the day, I think it was like the 2 days after I got back from that trip was when international borders were closing.
Wow.
And then I just like never flew again. It was just a very weird thing. So,
yeah.
But yeah, being a flight attendant, I love this job so much. And I actually, the first week that I started as a flight attendant, I was really excited and I loved it. It was also just like scary. And it's a lot when you first start because people are just calling you in the middle of the night and are like, be at the airport in 3 hours. And you're like, okay, so get yourself together. I don't know where I'm going. But I started realizing really quickly that I was like, I think I want to be a pilot. I love the airline industry, but I don't really love pouring Coke all day long. I want like something more challenging. So, and there are challenging aspects to being a flight attendant, but it's not always in the everyday. It's kind of like, okay, sometimes I've had to administer oxygen to people, or I've had to like kick people off a flight because they were like threatening people. I don't know, like crazy things happen, but it's not every day. Thankfully, like I don't really want to be doing that kind of stuff every day, but
right.
I love the challenge of being a pilot. So that's kind of what I'm pursuing right now, actually. Is,
oh, wow.
The path to the flight deck. So that's a long, expensive journey, though. It's like going back to college. It's really a whole thing.
Yeah. But are you able to kind of get behind the scenes of like what that's like because of your family?
Yeah. And so I do have extended family that's in the airline industry. So I have an uncle and an aunt that I'm really close to. My uncle is a retired American Airlines pilot, and he was flying like the 777 giant jets to like India and China and amazing places. And then my aunt was a flight attendant for 15 years. And then their daughter became a flight attendant, and she married a pilot at JetBlue. So I've got all these like people in my extended family that fly as well. So we have fun when we all get together and like comparing our airline stories. That kind of gave me the inspiration because they were all in the industry before I was. So I got to see that lifestyle. I got to see both what it's like to be a flight attendant and what it's like to be a pilot. And a lot of times it looks really similar schedule wise. They're just on the go constantly. And my aunt was doing like London flights all the time, going to London every week. And I was like, I want to go to London every week. So that kind of was what was initially appealing to me about becoming a flight attendant.
So do you,
that like freedom.
Do you get to pick your routes, or do you like, can you say, hey, I want to have like a different route all the time, or I want to have the same route all the time, or whatever? or do you just get thrown wherever they need you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So for the airline industry, at least for the company I'm with, I think for most companies, it's like this. It's entirely seniority based. So it's like when you are really junior, like I am, even though I'm now going on 3 years in the company, I'm like a baby, and people will still say, oh, welcome. You're only 3 years in the company. Welcome to the company. I'm like, okay, yeah, I know what I'm doing though, 3 years in. But so there, you're not really considered senior till you've been around like 20, 30 years. It's,
oh, wow.
It's ridiculous. Like people get really into this career. And so once you're more senior, once you're like 10 plus years, I would say you're pretty much guaranteed at that point to be holding a line is what it's called. And that just means you have a dedicated schedule. But up until, I mean, before like maybe your fifth year, you're probably not going to hold a line. And so you're on call, and that's called being a reserve. So you get your schedule every month of the days that you're on call. And I think it's like 18 days it's pretty average that I would be on call. And then sometimes I'll go like a week or two without anything happening, and I'll just like sit at home and bankroll. Like they have to pay me a certain amount, even if they don't use me. So sometimes months are slower, and especially in the winter and people aren't traveling that much. And so I don't get used, but then in the summer I'll be flying like 100 hours a month, and I'll just, we call it turn and burn. They'll like call you for a trip. You go to the airport 3 hours later, you fly your trip for 3 days, you come home, you rest for 12 hours, and they call you again and you go do it again. So it's just, it's like an insane lifestyle sometimes, but that's, it comes and goes with the seasons and with travel demand. But yeah, I've been called and told, actually this was like the worst and best trip I ever had. Was I was 6 weeks in to the job, like brand new. And I was just getting into bed at like 11 o'clock because I didn't know yet. The cardinal rule of being a flight attendant on call is sleep when you can. Like if you have to sleep during the day, do it. Just like sleep when they're not calling you. So I went to bed at like 11 o'clock, and 11:05 crew scheduling called and is like, you're going to Brazil. And I was like, okay, I don't know how this is going to go. That's a 10-hour flight and I literally haven't slept. So it was just an insane trip because all of us, the whole crew, got replaced with people just like me that were brand new, didn't know what they're doing, and slept all day. So it was wild. But yeah, so that kind of stuff can happen. Other times they'll be nice and call you the day before and say, tomorrow you have just a one-day trip, and they're really gentle with you, but it's not always that way.
Oh my God, that sounds crazy. I used to have like, so I flew a lot growing up also. And like, as a little kid, one of the things that I always thought that I wanted to do is continue flying and be a flight attendant, because I would see them all the time and they look like they have this glamorous lifestyle, you know, walking through the airport with the small little luggage and get right on the plane. I'm like, that's so cool. They can go wherever they want to. But like, in reality, I don't think I would ever be able to do that because I need a little bit more structure than that. And I also wouldn't be able to like deal with people for that long.
Yeah, it takes a special person, I've learned. Like, this job is not for everyone. I think a lot of people love to travel, so they get into the career because they love to travel, but the most drop off happens within the first year or two because people just are like, this is not worth it. Like,
yeah,
I could make more bartending. Like in your first year you make pennies, and you get raises every year, so it gets better. But your first year is like literally miserable, and you're just getting called all the time, and you can't have your life, and then you're making next to nothing. So it is exhausting in the very beginning, but it does get so much better. But yeah, I have also learned you need to have like some desire to be like nurturing, because yeah. if you don't love people, you're gonna have a really hard time, and people can be brutally mean to you for no reason, just because they've had a bad travel day, and then they take it out on you because you're the first face they see. Yep. So you just have to be prepared and have a thick skin. And yeah, it's a great job. I kind of love the chaos of it. It's not like the schedule is not for everybody. And I know a lot of people would have a hard time with the inconsistency of it, but for me, that was kind of a draw. Was like, I never know what any day is going to look like. I may have one schedule given to me and then it completely changes. So it's just like, even once I have my trip planned out, it could go completely different than how I think it's going to go. So you just never know.
Oh my gosh. That's
keeps
crazy.
Things interesting for sure.
So tell me about the times that you lived abroad too, because that's that was super, super interesting when I heard about that. And that was before the flight attendant days, right?
Yeah, it was. First time out of the country was actually with my family. It was spring break and we went to Paris and London. And that was incredible. We just had, it was like a whirlwind week. We did like 3 days in each place. And my family just like had saved up to take us to Europe. And it was really exciting. It was my senior year of high school. And I just fell in love with it. Like France was like the best thing I'd ever seen. I was like, this is so not overrated. This is like everything I ever dreamed it would be and more.
A lot of people, Paris?
Yeah. A lot of people say Paris is overrated. And I was like,
oh my God,
disagree.
I hated Paris.
Oh my gosh. I loved it. I feel like people either love it or hate it though, which is so funny. Like I've only ever heard, nobody ever goes to Paris and is like, meh, it was whatever.
Yeah.
They're either like, that was the best or that was the worst. But yeah, for me, I loved it. Once I was in college, I went to a school that encouraged travel abroad. And so part of it was, part of your degree was you have to go somewhere else for some phase of your studies. So it could be for a semester, it could be for a week, it could be in Paris, or it could be like in North Carolina. And so I went to school in Tennessee. So North Carolina is not far at all. So it just depended on your project that you wanted to pursue. You could either go with like a pre-planned project that the school created, or you could pitch your own to like your department and tell them where you're going and what you plan to do there. So it was just really a cool program that we had in place. So me and a couple other art students, because I was in the fine art program at my university, we got together and just like planned this little France trip. And I say planned very loosely. We were like, we're going to go to France, do art stuff. And our teacher was just the best ever. She's still like one of my favorite mentors I've ever had. And she was like, you know what? I have a contact. I did painting lessons when I was your age in France, and I still know this guy, and I bet he would want to teach you. So we just like connected with this random like British guy who was teaching painting in France.
That is so cool that you
and
literally
we just went there.
You took painting lessons in France.
Yeah, I feel really bougie when I say that, but
that
it was like
so cool.
It was probably like one of my favorite things I've ever done in my life. So we went there for a semester. It was my sophomore year of college. And we were 20 years old. I think most of us were 20. There was a couple of girls that were a little older than me, so maybe they were like 21. But there was five of us just living in the south of France, not far. So we weren't in Paris. We were in this teeny little town that was like an hour away from Bordeaux. So it's like closer to the Spanish border.
Okay.
And we just would like walk our little selves to painting class every day. And we're like drinking wine in France because we could. And I was like, don't tell my parents I'm drinking wine. They don't need to know. But when we had no chaperone, we're just like running wild in France. So it was very much, I like to describe it as like a sisterhood of the traveling pants kind of moment, because we're just living every like teenage girl's dreams.
That is so cool. Yeah, literally. Not even teenage girls, like grown ass women's dream.
Yeah, grown ass women dream. So yeah, I love the, like that whole trip was amazing. I just have such good memories of that time. And that kind of just continued that initial love that I already had for travel, and the little bit of travel that I'd done. That was my first time going out of the country by myself. And so we all kind of like had our own travel itinerary and just met up in the country. So it was terrifying, but amazing. And I just loved it. And yeah, and that led to a lot of other things. I mean, we did a little travel during that too. We went to Barcelona all together for a weekend. And then I flew back through London and had a day by myself in London. So I did a little bit more like branching out on my own on that trip too, but it just led to, I just couldn't stop. I was like addicted to traveling. So once you get the bug, it's really hard to quit.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Oh man. So then, what happened in Germany and India when you went there?
Yeah, we could have a whole podcast episode about this time in my life. So after college, it was really common for a lot of kids that I knew to go into like a missions oriented program. So some kids did this as a gap year after high school. I chose my gap year after college. And so it was an arts oriented program. And we were studying in Germany, and we were just kind of learning to use different kinds of art as humanitarian aid. So I was doing photography and painting and like music and videography and teaching English and just all this different stuff. And so we would just like go around to different groups that needed us. We spent a couple weeks at an orphanage in India and we're like teaching them how to paint and just really fun stuff like that. But it also became this big pivotal life-changing experience for me. I mean, it was 7 months long, so it's
wow.
That's like a very significant amount of time, and it really caused me to pause and think about like what I believe and why I believe it, and is this whole thing that I've been raised in, is that really the trajectory of my life? And I did see a lot of like abuse of the religion in this particular group. And it just really, I think, caused me to pause and look at the world differently than I ever had before. So it kind of became this big eye-opening deconstruction time for me, where I was just reevaluating everything I ever thought I knew. And I came home with like parasites and health issues, and I was like spiraling because my world was falling apart.
Oh my
like
God.
My spiritual community and everything I ever thought I knew was like completely different. So but yeah, it was a really just big radical time of change for me, and I feel like I can pinpoint a lot of my adult life and adult growth to that experience. So I don't regret at all that I did it, but I think looking back, I also, it can make me angry sometimes when I think about it, because of just some of the lessons that I learned there were really hard. But it also, what was cool about that trip was that it gave me some glimpses at different ways of living that I'd never would have seen otherwise. And I was like teaching English to Tibetan monks in northern India and just hanging out with them every day for a month. I think it was about a month we were there. And then spending time at this orphanage. And I was like, I never thought that I liked kids that much, honestly, but like spending time at this orphanage with these sweet little babies for a couple of weeks, that was also just, that really like pulled at me. And then also just getting to bond with my team, because there was 20 of us who were all artists and we all had our own kind of focus that we were trying to develop while we were there. So at the time I was actually there for fine art and for painting and drawing. I wasn't really that into photography at the time. So, but there were photographers on my team and they were kind of using the time to connect with people and build a portfolio and all this cool stuff. So, and then teach others photography as well. So it was a really beautiful experience. And I still have some really close friends that came out of that. I think it's like this whole thing of shared trauma.
Yeah.
Come out of this like
definitely
super
a bonding
hard
experience.
Yes. We come out of this super hard, painful thing and all have the same parasites probably. So we're all linked in that way.
Oh my God. So is that when you got into photography more so? Or
yeah. And I've always loved photography, but I never really considered myself a photographer. I think for a long time, I thought that to be a serious photographer, you had to do weddings. I don't know why that was in my head, but I was like, if you don't shoot weddings, like you're not going to make any money. And then you're not really a professional. Cause I think that's the only exposure I'd had to professional photography was wedding photography. So I didn't really know that you could do other things, but my first camera, my mom gave it to me in fourth grade and it had a floppy disk as a memory card. So
oh my God.
I've been around the block for a while with a floppy disk. I can't even believe it when I think about that, but
yeah.
And so I do think that time of being in Germany and India and all these other places, like traveling alongside photographers gave me the start of where my photography is now. Cause I was playing around with different settings and kind of learning how that worked and learning my camera. So yeah, I think that would probably be more where I started to see different kinds of photography and things that you could do with it.
And then when did the shift happen to become a photographer on the side? Is it during your furlough time or was it before then?
So I would occasionally take shoots, just people would contact me because they liked my photos. It was usually like someone I already had some kind of connection with, and they would say, hey, can you do family photos for me? And I'm like, sure. And like, I didn't have a service list or like pricing sheet. So I would just like make up a number, like what is this 2 hours worth to me? And I just throw a number out there and I'm like, if they pay it, then great. If they don't, then I didn't want to do it that bad anyways. So like, that's what a lot of people would come to me with, was family photo requests, which I was fine doing that, but I didn't love it. It wasn't my passion or anything. But once I came back from Germany, I was back in the US for a few months, and then I got a job at a marketing agency in Nashville where I was living at the time. So this was a startup company. I was directly assisting the CEO of the company, and he was a serial entrepreneur and had his hands in a million different things. So I was also like working with him in his mastermind where he was coaching other entrepreneurs, and I would help plan those retreats that were happening quarterly. And I would photograph the events also once we were like at the retreat. He believed in my photography before I had anything to show. I don't know why. I think I just told him I like photography, and he's like, great, you're my event photographer now. So that was also, that was a great experience for me, just kind of being thrown in, and suddenly I'm doing headshots for all these big business owners and coaches. And I was really fortunate to be plugged into this network of people that they were doing something that I couldn't understand yet, but it was my first big exposure to entrepreneurship, and just seeing all these people forge their own path and make incredible incomes by starting their own stuff was really inspiring for me. So that kind of was this magical like meeting point of my photography starting to blossom, and also my introduction into like the self-development space and the coaching space and just entrepreneurship in general.
That's awesome. I like that, because you always need people like that in your life to just trust you, but kind of throw you into the deep end. That way you can like sink or swim kind of thing. Like, and it's awesome that you've had that, and that you have that like pseudo mentorship, not really a mentorship, but like that opportunity to be able to just dive headfirst into this whole new world of entrepreneurship, basically, and get that direct view into what it is without actually having to do it yourself. Because a lot of the times people don't really get the behind the scenes look at what it takes to be an entrepreneur until they actually do it themselves.
Yeah, that's so true. I learned a lot of hard lessons at that job. It was another, I keep saying whirlwind experience, but I only was there for like 8 months, but I just learned so much of what to do and also what not to do, because I saw a lot of successes and I saw a lot of failures. So you, and especially being the assistant to the main guy, you get to see a little bit of everything. And also in startups and in entrepreneurship in general, you are just, if you choose the life of working at a startup, you've got to be prepared to work like six other jobs that are not in your job description at all. So
yeah.
that was also really cool to just be thrown into anything and just get to learn a lot of different pieces of what it takes to run a business.
So I want to go back to, you started doing family portraits, and then you did event photography for this guy, and you did some headshots and stuff like that for those other entrepreneurs. When did you kind of figure out your style, and have you figured out your style? Because your stuff, all the stuff that I've seen, at least on your website, on your Instagram, it all looks very branded, and you have a good aesthetic for your photos that you take. And when did you get into product photography, and talk me through that whole journey, basically?
Yeah. So I think the whole time, like anytime I was shooting anything, I was just constantly trying to critique my own work and pull out like, what are the best things here? What did I do well? What did I not do so well? And it just, it kind of has just taken a life of its own. I feel like I can look back at my photography and stuff that I thought was awesome like 5 years ago, I'm like, oh, yikes. Like, I would not show that to anyone now. But it's just all going through these phases of learning. And And also part of it is learning my camera better. I've since also upgraded a lot of my gear, but I really think that the cost of your gear has very little to do with your skill as a photographer. So I've kind of rewarded my developing skills by like upgrading my equipment, but a big jump in the quality of my photos came when I started just exploring what my camera could do and learning how to get the photos right in the camera before editing them. Because before, I would consider myself more of a professional now, but I can see this kind of clear-cut line of amateur to professional. Even though I was getting paid before, my photos just lacked any kind of knowledge behind them. I can look back now and say, like, I was just firing, and if it was a great shot, it was because I got lucky. So now I've kind of turned the corner on that, where when I get a great shot, it's because I set it up correctly and I knew what I was doing. So I think that feels really good to be able to say as a photographer that I can claim my position as a photographer and not feel like I'm just like shooting in the dark and hoping for the best. So that's felt really good. But yeah, the style just comes naturally to me. As my photography has evolved and improved, I think just there's something inherent, like you can look at anyone who is a professional photographer and they may not even be able to explain why two unrelated images look similar, but they just do. It's just what you're drawn to. Mm-hmm. It's how the lighting strikes you. It's what you decide to do in post-processing with your edits. So I don't know. It's hard to explain on some level, but part of it definitely is just technical skill and developing that further.
Yeah, definitely. And that's so funny because you're right. I mean, I think that's the case with any creative and anyone that considers themselves an artist or any artist in general. It's you look at some of your early work as you're still kind of defining and refining your what you're drawn to and the way that you like to design certain things. And then you see where, like, if you continue down that path, you see where you end up. And it's fun, I think, to compare the beginning to the end, or the beginning to the middle even, and seeing like how you've evolved as a creative. So that's really cool that you pointed that out. So it was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody's got their journey. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly. I want to pivot now a little bit, and I want to talk a little bit about the branding aspect of it, becoming a brand strategist, how you even started this. You saw a need as you came across things, and as you just talked to different people, you saw different needs and you were willing to fill it. Where exactly did that come from? Was it just really like you were dabbling a little bit in your off time and creating a branding, your own personal brand, and then you decided to help others do that? And tell me the story behind starting the branding boutique.
The branding boutique. The course. Yeah. Yeah. And I also forgot to answer that other part of your question about brand photography specifically.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, we'll get to that too. But I started this business just because it was like January of 2020. So COVID was barely a thing yet. I guess it technically was, but nobody really thought it was anything. So
right.
Life was still continuing as usual. And I just had a lot of downtime because it was the winter and flying was not as high as it is in the summer. So I had a lot of downtime where I was waiting to get called and I wasn't. And I just wanted to, I don't remember what the initial pull even was. I just decided I want to learn about blogging and about making money online, because I've seen a lot of people do this. And I felt like I don't know exactly what I want to do, but I feel like if they can do it, I can do it. So it just kind of started with this mentality of like, how the heck are people making money online? And like, how can I do that? Because yeah. I have so much free time, like, why not? So I started learning about blogging and I was like devouring everything I could find. Like if I found somebody that I felt like they knew what they were doing, I would just read everything they ever wrote to try to figure out how they did this. And so I learned about WordPress and building websites and just SEO and affiliate marketing and all this different stuff. And I was just kind of doing it for fun, just to see what the heck could happen. And I was also, I've really come a long way in just a little over a year, because at that time I was terrified to brand myself as myself. I felt like who am I to be CarlyChamberlick.com? Like, who does that? Who is just like, one day I have my personal social media and the next day I'm like, I'm a business lady. So it just felt disjointed, and I couldn't quite connect myself to being an entrepreneur because I wasn't making money yet. So it felt like it was total imposter syndrome of feeling like a fraud and feeling like I can't put this out publicly because people will roast me. But then it's like, nobody cares what you're doing. But I was so worried about what people would think, which is hilarious to me now. But so I started a blog that had nothing to do with my name. And I just put it out there just to start figuring things out. And a couple months later, I was finally like, you know what, I'm just gonna, I owned CarlyChamberlick.com because in art school, we went through a whole semester of like building your online portfolio and creating a website. And so I owned that domain, but there was nothing updated on it. It was super old stuff. And so I thought, why don't I just like make this more interesting and more usable? And then kind of a few months later, like completely abandoned that original blog because I saw that the potential to brand myself was much greater and it would really be a lot easier than just building this brand new entity from scratch. I could just work off of me and what I'd already been doing and the things that I'm interested in. And so it started to feel more natural to me. I didn't really like set out to make myself a company or make myself a brand, but I just wanted to do more of the things that I loved because I love flying, but at heart, I'm a very creative person and I'm an artist, and I wanted to embrace that and see if I could be financially successful with the things that I'm more interested in. So that's kind of where it began. And then I started with brand photography and web design, and then through consultation in there, just because people sometimes had questions or wanted me to help them with a specific thing. And so I just was like, here, I've got this hour long call that you can book and we can work through this together. So, and I started realizing that the value of the things that come naturally to me don't come naturally to everybody. So finding the things that I'm uniquely good at or better at than other things, mm-hmm. then I was able to kind of bridge the gap for people that didn't know how to bring a visual cohesiveness to their business. Because there's plenty of entrepreneurs out there that have an amazing product or have an amazing service, but they don't know how to make it look great online or how to reach the ideal client that they want to be reaching. So that's kind of where that all began, was that stuff was coming easy to me, but it wasn't to other people. So exactly like you said, I was seeing a need and I was just working to be the person to fill it because I didn't really know what I wanted my company to do. I just knew I wanted to have a company. So it just kind of started out of working with people that were already in my circles and filling the needs that I could for them.
That's awesome. And when did you decide that you wanted to do a full-blown branding course?
So that idea started forming after just a couple consultation calls that I did. I just do these one-off calls and I price them pretty low because I do a 1-hour call, but then I will take the information in that call and create just a really quick draft of brand guidelines for this person. So normally like an agency would charge thousands for that. I charge $200 for that. So I try to make it very approachable, but it's just because for me, I can pound that out in like a couple hours and it's not a big deal. But I started seeing the same questions come up over and over in those calls where people were just struggling with the same thing. So I just started seeing what are the common threads, what are people struggling with, what do they tend to ask a lot about. And then I just started recording answers to that and putting them in this course. So it kind of just, at the beginning of the course too, I didn't really know what that was going to look like. I just knew that there were questions out there that I was answering a lot. And I wanted to have one place that I could point people to that could answer all of those questions. And so then I also wanted to make that more affordable than my coaching calls, because you're not getting exactly the one-on-one tailored experience of getting your specific scenarios answered, but hopefully it's helping a lot of people figure out different things that they may not even have known to ask about, because I'm pulling from what other people have asked about, and it hopefully is bringing up other ideas for the people that go through the course as well.
It really is very comprehensive and very intuitive to go through, because I took the beta test version of it. Mm-hmm. And as I was going through it, I think that I'm a good marketer and I know how to brand other people, but turning the lens around and kind of putting the mirror back on myself and trying to brand myself as a personal brand or brand my work and the stuff that I'm doing, it was really interesting in some of the ways that you position things. Like, there was one module in there about trying to define your niche. And I was like, wow, I'm going about this all wrong for myself. So it was really interesting. Like, you break it down in such an awesome way to kind of really force yourself to think about the interesting questions that will help you get to the end result. So it's actually, it was super helpful and super, super insightful. Is this going to be like a passive thing where you're just going to let this live on its own? Or is this something that you're going to like start integrating into like your coaching calls that you do and stuff like that?
Yeah. So I know that some course creators, actually, I think a lot of course creators tend to launch something for a week or two and then like take it down. And then maybe 6 months or a year later, they'll like relaunch it again. And they just have these phases where it's available, but I didn't really want to do that. I kind of just wanted to put this out there as another option for people. It's also slightly more budget friendly. If you didn't want to do one-on-one coaching, you can get a lot more out of the course than maybe we could in even a 1 hour call. So it's just something to make branding accessible to as many people as possible. So it is just kind of a living right now in my roster of services and products, which actually I really have loved. So I also have an Etsy store, which I have had for years, but I only really started filling up and getting a lot of customers last year, because this is just another thing I tacked into my business, was like, I'm going to start making digital products. And the digital products and the digital courses have been a significant portion of my revenue and my business. And it's just this awesome thing where I can put my heart and soul into it and work really hard on it for weeks on end. But then once it's done, and once I've kind of like birthed that idea out into the world, it just gets to live on and on and on. And I don't have any overhead other than like the time it takes me to make that. But once it exists, it's just out there and people can continue to buy it. So I've really been loving that model, just as kind of like a filler in my business. I still love being a live, active presence in my business and also providing a service through my photography. But having that just like backup as money coming into my business has been really awesome too. And just knowing that I'm not limited by the time that I have, I can just have this product live on and people can access it on their own time.
Yeah. I like that. The exact thing that you just said, people can access it on their own time, because a lot of times when you see these types of courses online, and to your point, yeah, they're done in a specific time frame. They only live there for a couple of weeks and then the creator takes it down and then relaunches it maybe in a different format or whatever. But like, if you're not available in those couple of weeks, or if that doesn't line up with when you're mentally ready to take the shift of like branding yourself or rebranding yourself or whatever, you're not going to get any value from it. You're not going to want to take the course exactly at that moment. So I like that you're offering it kind of as an evergreen thing that people can take whenever they have the time and whenever they feel ready in their business to tackle this. So it is, it's awesome that you do that. I like that.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. And my plan with this too is to improve it constantly. Yeah. So, I mean, now that I spent like months developing this initial version of it, I'm like, all right, I need to step back and just let it live for a little bit. But I also know that as I continue to learn and grow and make my own business better, that I want to keep sharing what I'm learning. So I'm planning on continuing to keep it updated and keep it fresh and keep adding in new information and more templates and just whatever I can to make it more valuable and helpful, because that's really why I created it in the first place. It's not meant to be like purely a money-making thing in my business. I really want it to be helpful to people. So that's my vision around it, is just make it better all the time.
Yeah. And I think that's an important vision to have, is you're not doing it just for the, yes, you're obviously you're in business to make money because you have to be, but at the end of the day, you're doing it to provide value and to help other people and help other people help themselves. So having that vision and that goal in mind is like the most important thing that you could do as a business owner.
Right. Yeah.
You talked about how you have continuous learning. What kind of ways do you continue to learn and teach yourself new things? And are there courses that you take on a regular basis, or is it really just whatever you kind of see next, whatever need you see next, you kind of dive into there and then you fill that and then you go into another void?
Yeah. So that's definitely how I started. I've been trying to grow out of that and really stabilize myself in my offers, because I can definitely fall into the trap of like, that looks fun, I'll do that. And that looks fun. And I have a hard time saying no to anything.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah. Anything that looks remotely fun, I'm like, I'm in. So, yeah. But I'm learning like, okay, but people are going to get confused, and you have to stay very, very clear and intentional in what you're doing. And I think so part of my journey too has been realizing, I don't know if you are into the Enneagram or anything, but I'm an Enneagram 7, and the core fear of the 7 is being stuck or being trapped. So I've had to learn that, like, I, just because I'm attracted to doing all of the things doesn't mean I should. That just means like that my nature is to try everything, but to keep other people engaged in what I'm doing, I need to be focused and I need to be very clear. So I have really worked on honing down my offers and starting to say no to things that I can check my service list. And I'm like, do I offer that? No, I don't offer social media management. I'm not doing that. So there's been that, but also something that has been huge for me is that I invested in group coaching it was like the end of last summer. I think it was August. It was July or August. I got into a group coaching program and I just picked it. I think everybody needs to find the mentor that is right for them. And that may not be feasible that it's someone that you pay for their time. Maybe in the beginning you have no money to invest and that's not like something you can do, but find someone that is doing a thing that you want to do and follow them and watch every YouTube video they ever made and read their entire blog cover to cover. Do just whatever they are doing, figure out how they're doing it. Because my mentor that I have now, she always says success leaves clues. And I've loved that so much that you can get further and faster by paying for someone's time, because they're going to be there with you and focused and helping you on your mission. But if you can't pay for their time, then just dive into what they're doing and really pay attention, because if they are successful, there's going to be some kind of trail that they leave behind where like 5-10 years ago, they may not have been doing anything remotely similar to what they're doing now. So you can kind of start to see like, okay, this is how she was at the beginning of her blog and the things that she was writing about, or whatever it is, her podcast or whatever is out there. And then you can start to see maybe what's shifting and changing and the direction that they head and the things they try, and you'll see what works and what doesn't work. So that has been huge for me, is just taking notes from people that are doing the things that I want to do. But then also I think when you can put yourself in a position to invest in some kind of coaching, whether that's group coaching or one-on-one. I chose group coaching because it better fit my budget. It was still expensive, but it's been well worth it. And I'm still in this program and we have Zoom calls every single week. And it's just, even if I don't feel like I'm hearing anything that is new information to me, it's still just empowering to be on this call with mostly women. There are a few men, but mostly women that are doing or trying to do the same kinds of things that I'm doing. Because as an entrepreneur, especially if you don't have a team yet, which I don't yet, I plan to hire in the next year or so, but if you're working on your own, it can get really lonely and you can kind of start to lose sight of why you're doing these things day in and day out. Like, what is the point? And maybe you lose perspective on different aspects of your business that you're not as strong in. So having different kinds of people around you that are doing essentially, they have the same goal. That's given me new vision, new ideas, new confidence in what I'm doing. And I just really encourage people to get something like that in their life, however they can.
Yeah. I like that because you, you can also use it as like a sounding board and to, like you said, you have like-minded individuals around you that you surround yourself with, because when you're on your own, it's very easy to kind of wrap your mind around, like you're living in an echo chamber of your own thoughts, and you can, I don't know, for me at least, I feel like I have ADD sometimes, and I'm just like, this shiny object, pretty thing, this is cool, this is one direction I want to take in, and then this is another one, this sounds really cool. Yeah, social media, I could totally do social media. I could totally do branding. I could totally do photography. I could totally do this. I could totally do that. And then you kind of get lost. And so having a group or other people that you can kind of surround yourself with to fact check you, to make sure that you can like bounce ideas off of, to learn from, as you said, is super, super important, because that way, like, you learn more that way, you learn more quickly mm-hmm. rather than trying to do it all on your own, because right. you have other people to be able to say, okay, I want to model something that I'm doing, or I see the way that they're doing this, and let me try that, and then let me see if that works for my business, let me see if it doesn't. So I like that you said that, and I like the fact that you said that you have to get not only get mentors, but like sometimes you do have to pay for the value that you want and that you feel like you need, mm-hmm. because a lot of people don't want to put in the work that it takes to get to where they want to be. And then a lot of people aren't willing to invest the time, effort, and money into themselves and their company and what they want to do. And so there's a ton of free information out there, but sometimes you do need to make a little bit more of that investment and be able to take the deep dive and level up the value that you're gonna get out of something just by spending sometimes a little bit money, sometimes a lot of money, mm-hmm. but it really depends on what you value and what you are willing to get out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's also a clear-cut distinction between being handed something for free and investing of yourself, your time and your money into whatever that program might be, or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be a coaching program, but whatever it is that you're investing your money into, you're more likely to complete that because you put your money into it. And yeah, so yeah, a lot of times you'll see like people give out scholarships to their bigger courses or something, but then the people that get the scholarships to the big courses often don't complete them or don't get results from them because they weren't really that invested. It wasn't something that they had to sacrifice for. So mm-hmm. they weren't as emotionally tied to the outcome. So I think having that perspective on it and realizing it's not some big splurge, it's investing back into yourself and into your business, which ultimately, if you get the promised result of that investment, you're going to make your money back and then some. And I think people can be really quick to jump on like airline deals and go buy vacation tickets, and they won't think twice about like a cruise or something. I mean, now in COVID times, well, yeah. you think twice about a cruise, but you used to not if there's some kind of deal. But people will not always be willing to invest in their success. And I don't know, I think a lot of that is just maybe there's some mindset work to do around yeah. that. I mean, mindset is such a buzzword now, but just, yeah, just sometimes you may not be ready for that big program yet. It's not, you can't be looking for a mentor to rescue your business. You've got to be looking for a mentor who you can view as a guide to help you continue the work that you're already doing, because no program out there is going to save you or make you $1 million. You've got to be the one putting in the work and dedicating yourself to getting the result that is promised, essentially.
Yeah. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier too. You also have to be ready for that. So just as you said, no course out there, no mentor, no nothing is going to rescue you. It's not going to be a magic pill that you take. But what it can do is, if you are ready to make the changes that you need to make, if you're ready to kind of level up in your business and in your personal branding, and just in life in general, you need to notice the moment in time when you are ready to take that next step, and then you need to invest in that next step. Because if you invest before you're ready, maybe not before you're ready, because I don't like that, because I do believe in taking the step before you feel you're ready to take the step to do mm-hmm. so. And that's kind of exactly what you do all the time, is you start and then you figure it out along the way. But making sure that your mindset is there and is ready to make something, to make some sort of change. Because if you're just feeling stuck and you're not mentally prepared to like do the work, you're never going to get anything out of it.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. Yeah, because it could be tempting too if you see somebody that's working with a specific coach and they're having amazing results and growth in their business. And you're like, well, I want to work with that coach too, because they're like, I want that kind of results. But that person might not be the right fit for you. They may not be like, they may be either behind you or before, like ahead of you in what you're doing. And so you've got to also be realistic at the level that you're at. And something that's helped me a lot too, because I've also taken a lot of other courses about photography and about blogging and building websites. I think it's really good to get clear on your goals and what you're trying to learn and accomplish, because a coach that is helping people scale from like $100,000 to $500,000 a year, like if you're brand new in your business, that's not the person for you. You may want to make $500,000 a year, but you've got to first make $1,000. Like you've got to take that first step. And so finding that coach that is ahead of you, but not unrealistically ahead of you, is a great place to start. And then, you know, keep those bigger coaches in mind, because when you do grow and you're making more money, your mentorship is going to change too. And I love this mentor that I have now, and I plan on sticking with her for as long as her work is feeding me. And that could be a year, that could be several years. But I think just that's another thing that I would recommend, is don't course hop and don't mentor hop. If you find somebody that their advice is working for you, or it's resonating with you, then keep going, because you can kind of get sucked into like the course vortex of taking all of the courses and trying to learn a million different things from a million different people. And there's really something to be said about consistency and staying focused and staying dedicated to the work you set out to do.
Yeah. That is something that I'm struggling with hardcore, is the consistency, not the consistency, but the focus, and trying to obviously maintain what I originally set out to do. And my initial vision was something. And I feel like through the course of the last couple of months, I've just let myself kind of chase the next shiny object. And now I feel all discombobulated. So that's why I need to take your course again, to be able to kind of refocus myself and bring it back to what that focus initially was, and understand the first couple steps that you need to take. So this is like very, very fascinating to me. And it's like right at the moment in time where I need it. So I appreciate this awesome. So much.
Yeah. I'm so glad. That's cool to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now that you say that, so the branding boutique, I think I initially just set out to answer the questions that my clients were asking. But once I kind of stepped back and looked at the whole thing put together, I was realizing like, this could be for someone brand new in a business who hasn't even launched anything yet. This could be for somebody who has a line of products, but isn't happy with the way that they've branded themselves and wants to kind of redesign the whole thing. This could be for a new product that you're launching, or it could be for a business that's existed for a long time. So I think that a lot of the core lessons that I tried to put in there are things that you can go back to over and over, and you can use the same questions to approach different outcomes. So it's things that I ask myself when I'm launching a new product, but it's also things that I asked at the beginning of my business, or tried to be cognizant of asking, was just like, what is my big goal here? What problem am I solving? All of these things are really important to ask, so that we're not just like, that looks fun, and then try to go do it, because you might get halfway through it and realize it was a waste of time, and it's not going to produce what you thought it was going to produce. Or maybe you didn't even know in the beginning what you wanted it to be. And you're just kind of, because I've been guilty of that, where I'll just like follow a rabbit trail and then realize like, I just wasted a lot of time on this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh man. I want to touch on something that you glazed over. You said, just because I'm good at something does not mean that I need to continue offering this as a service forever. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because a lot of times another trap that people fall into is they stay complacent and they stay comfortable with what they're doing because they're good at it. They've developed a good technique. They've developed a good following, maybe, or whatever it is that they're working on they've allowed themselves to feel comfortable and to stay in that comfort zone. And it takes a really strong mentality to say, no, just because I'm good at this, just because I feel comfortable doing this. And I myself am one of those people. I know that I've stayed in places in my life and in timeframes in my life too long because I felt comfortable there. I think it takes a big mentality to be able to acknowledge that, yeah, this is not fun for me. I don't enjoy this anymore. This isn't serving me in the way that I want it to serve me, and to really start saying no to things. And that's something that you said you did for one of your clients or one of your friends that you were managing social media for or something like that. And now you've actually started saying no to more things. So how have you kind of come to that realization and continue to start saying no, essentially?
Yeah, it's not always easy. And I've only recently started getting better at this, but, and still, like, just the other day, somebody was like, oh, can you, and what did they ask me? It was either something about social media or like, can you write my monthly email newsletter for me? And I was like, man, that's really tempting because it wouldn't be hard to do and it wouldn't take a lot of time, but I don't really want to do that. Like, I don't want that to be like a constant thing that I offer for a lot of people. So I'm like, I could do it as a favor to this one person. And, you know, like, business is slow this month. So maybe wouldn't hurt to take on another project, but I've got to come back to my priorities and say, like, is this something that I want reflected in my business? Like, is this something that is going to move me forward in the goals that I have for photography? And no, it's not. Like, writing other people's newsletters is not going to move me forward in my own goals. And in fact, I've learned that writing like social media captions for other people, because I've done that a few times, is completely exhausting to me. And then I end up losing all steam for my own social media. So I think it's super important to look at it from two perspectives. One is this something that I love doing, that I enjoy, that just like brings me life? And the other one is this valuable in the market? Is this still something that my ideal client needs or solves a problem that they have? Because if it's not doing both of those things, it probably should not be on your service list. And actually, I don't know why I was reminded of this, but we were watching, what was it? We were watching a food show. Oh my gosh, who's that really mean celebrity chef? Oh, Hell's Kitchen.
Okay.
Is that what it was? And I think it was Hell's Kitchen that we were watching. And there was like a guy who owned a pizza restaurant, and he had an award for like the best pizza in Denver in like 1984. And he was super proud of that, but he had no customers in his restaurant. And he was like, well, I have the best pizza in Denver. So like, clearly nothing needs to change. And they had to come in and tell him, like, you had the best pizza like 30 years ago, man. And now no one is here and no one likes this. So I think it's also good to stay open to growing and changing with the needs and desires of your customers. Because if you had the best product on the market a decade ago, but no one's buying now, like, you've got to put your ego aside and be willing to say, like, something needs to change. Just because I love what I'm doing, like, that is not going to keep me in business. So we've got to find the conjunction point between what we love and what is needed and wanted.
I like that. The two Venn diagrams kind of converging together.
Right. Yeah. Because you also don't want to just make things just because people want to see that. You want to, like, if you're making something that you do not feel passionate about and you're not interested in and it doesn't excite you and you have a hard time getting out of bed and wanting to do this, like, just because people are buying it from you doesn't mean you should continue doing it. So it can be tricky because you can fall into one or the other camp of like, this is really fun or this is really profitable, but we've got to find the intersection.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be the sweet spot as to where you should build your business, but also where you should spend your time too, and your resources, and look for growth opportunities in that conjunction point.
Right.
I like that. All right. Last kind of thing that I want to go back to again is, and you touched on this a little bit, you started branding yourself as, I think it's Hey CJ Media. And
yeah.
And then this other entity that you started with your blog, and then ultimately decided on a personal brand. So if someone, actually, sorry, I had like three other questions that just popped into my brain as I started going there. So let's start there. I feel like right now, especially in the world that we surrounded ourselves in, personal branding feels like a buzzword that's out there now. And so I don't know if it's truly a buzzword or if it's people are actually just gravitating more towards personal brands. So what are your takes on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that my personal opinion is that it is much easier and more natural to be a personal brand because you're just kind of emphasizing what you already are and the things you naturally already are interested in and talk about. And also there's this level of connection where people want to know other people. Like they don't feel connected to a company without a face attached to it. So that's why like Progressive Insurance is a example I use a lot. Progressive has flow because Progressive by themselves is just an insurance company, but Progressive with this figure they created named Flow is like a face that you connect to the company and you feel instinctually, you feel some kind of personal connection to that. So where I think small businesses can fall flat is if they just pull cutesy words out of nowhere that have no real meaning or no real connection, and they're not ever like showing people using their products, or you don't always have to show yourself. I think that's a misconception of a powerful brand, is it doesn't have to be all about you all the time. It's great to show your face and to talk to your customers and have that personal connection. But also part of it is just showing people in general in your social media and showing like the lifestyle impact of your product or your service. And just having people brought into the story of your brand. So really, you're right, like personal brand has become a big buzzword, but I think the sentiment behind it is telling a good story that people feel like they can see themselves being a part of. So I feel like most people would have an easier time being a personal brand because it's easy to tell your own story because you know it because you're you. So you can tell your own story without having to work too hard at it. But if you're crafting like a Nike or a Walmart, like you've got a big task of telling that story without a face attached to it. So, and I mean, those companies, I can't speak to like their beginnings, but now they don't need a personal face because they are who they are. But every brand, the core of any successful brand is the story that they're telling and where the customer sees that they can fit into that. But yeah, so Hey CJ Media is really, I've kind of started putting that part of my company just in the behind the scenes kind of situation, because that's so I actually recently, just last week, got my S corp status, which is really exciting for me. Nice. So I'm now a corporation instead of an LLC. But so that was just what I named my LLC in the beginning, because I had my Etsy store, I had my online products and my photography and my web design. And I just kind of wanted this umbrella to like file all of my income and expenses through. So, and my family members call me CJ sometimes. So that's kind of where that came from. Okay. And then just tacked media on the end. So it encompasses everything. But yeah, I still, I've kind of been moving towards just being CarlyChamberlick.com. And what's great about my name is that I'm the only one in the entire world. So I can have like any email address, any social media handle that I want.
That's awesome.
And it's very hard for most people to both pronounce and spell it, but it's unique. So it benefits me in that way that it's unique.
Yeah, that's awesome. This is a conversation that I had with one of my friends as she was trying to brand herself. She made a name for herself as she was kind of developing through college, after college, when she did her first couple of roles, and everything was branded her own name. And then she got married and then she changed her name. So now she's in this in-between stage of half the stuff is branded with her original maiden name, half the stuff is branded with her married name. And she's like, I'm lost. I don't know what to point people to. I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. So is that like an issue that you've ever thought of, or something that you've ever like?
Yeah, no, it totally is. And you know, my whole life growing up, I was like, I can't wait to get married and change my name because I hate my name. It's like, it never gets pronounced or spelled right. But now, so my boyfriend and I, like we plan to get married someday. We just haven't like figured that piece out, but we talk about it a lot. We're just like, okay, I guess we should pick a date one of these years. But So, but I've always kind of, and I think this is a very personal decision. A lot of people maybe have negative association with their maiden name, or I don't know, maybe something changed in their life where they just, or they feel more connected to their married name now, whatever it might be. I think for me, my plan has pretty much always been to stick with my maiden name as my brand and pretty much like my public facing persona, and then just have my married name on like my driver's license. And
yeah,
because I personally really like that sentiment of taking his last name. I know like some people choose to do otherwise. I thought of hyphenating too, but I'm like, why make this name even more complicated than it needs to be? So I don't know. So maybe hyphenating is a good answer for some people. It's probably not for me, but yeah. So it again is a very personal decision for me. I decided early on, like, this is my brand. I'm just going to stick with it. I will legally change my name, but just for the sake of my business and keeping that all very straightforward and not confusing people, I'm just going to keep that all the same. But yeah, I think that's just something that everybody has to decide for themselves. And I think that's why you see a lot of like female photographers in particular that are like Elizabeth Marie Photography or whatever.
Yep, like, exactly.
Yeah. And then they use their middle name instead.
Yeah. It's harder for people, I think, for females to brand themselves because of that, because they go through a pseudo identity crisis where they're like, wait, my name's going to change. So what am I going to do?
Yeah, totally.
So that's smart.
Yeah. I definitely encourage people. And actually I talk about this in my course too, mm-hmm. about just using, I really think that a personal brand does really well with some form of your name in it, but it doesn't have to be like first name, last name. It can be, right. It can be like just your first name, just your last name. It can be a combination of middle name and something else, or it could even be a nickname. And a friend of mine uses his nickname that isn't, it's not his given name, but it's what most of his friends call him. And so he uses that in his business name. So I think there's a lot of different ways you can approach it and still make it very personal.
I love that. Okay. Last couple questions. If someone is coming to you, let's say they decide to book you as a client for one of your coaching calls, what's some of like the first couple things that you do with them to kind of uncover where they're, what they're struggling with in their branding, and some of the first initial steps that you would take with them?
So yeah, I start every call. Well, actually before we even get on the call, I have them fill out a questionnaire and I'll have them just tell me like, I'll just throw a couple softballs at them, like pretty easy questions. Like, tell me about your project and what inspired you to start this, or your project or your business, whatever it is, the thing that they're trying to brand, and what excited you about this in the beginning, and what kind of vision do you have for this in the future? Like at its peak, what would you want this to be? So just getting them thinking backwards and forwards and like past and future, what this is. But then we also really dive into, I also ask them in this questionnaire, who is your ideal client? And a lot of them don't know, and they've never thought of that before, or maybe they've heard the term because it's another common like marketing phrase that everybody says. So that maybe they've heard the term before and they thought they knew who it was, but they didn't actually give the time and attention to that part of their business that they thought they did. So we spend most of the call going over who their ideal client is. And we talk about everything. Like literally we will have a picture of this person drawn up by the end so that whenever they're speaking in their marketing content, like their copywriting, whether it's emails or a sales page or Instagram caption, they're going to be able to have this one person in mind and speak directly to them. So what's cool about that is that then it's hard for people at first. They're like, well, I want everybody to want my stuff. Like I don't want to just talk to one person. But what's cool about that is that it feels more personal and it feels more genuine to a lot of people. So you may be talking to one specific person, but it's going to call in a lot of different types of people that resonate with what you're saying, because it's not just a generalized sales pitch message. It's going to feel very conversational when you approach it from that way. And also what's great about that is when you have one person in mind, you can really kind of dive into the inner workings of their mind and their life and say like, what does their day-to-day look like? What problems do they encounter? What are just like issues that they have that they don't have answers to? And how can I help bridge that gap and fill that need for them? So when you're writing your marketing content, it really shouldn't be for the masses. It should be for solving that one person's problem. And that's going to in turn help a lot of people with their message.
I like that. Yeah. Everyone has to kind of define, create a persona of who it is that you're trying to target and talk to. And if you keep that person, give that person a name, give them like a hobby, give them like, make them an actual person in your life. In my old company, when we were starting to develop this completely new brand for something. And so we actually created, like, we bought like a stuffed animal and we put a t-shirt on him, a hat, and he had a name tag. He had like fun accessories based on what he liked. And that anytime we started to kind of question who we were talking to, we would just always look at the stuffed animal and be like, there's George. We have to remember what George likes, and George does not like this. That. Yeah. So
I love what I need to do. That's amazing. Yeah. No, that's so great. Yeah. I think a lot of times too, I think people are actually solving problems for a past version of themselves.
Yeah. That's true.
So a lot of times I'll tell people if they're really stuck on this, I'm like, think about you like 3 to 5 years ago. Where were you? What were your problems? What were you trying to figure out? And then you can literally write to a past version of you and just start explaining from those basics, the things that you didn't know then. Because really what we're trying to do too is like put ourselves exactly what you're saying, like, what does George need? What does he want? Not like, what do I want to teach? It's like, what does this person need to know? And what kind of language do I need to use to get them from point A to point B? So yeah, I think that's really helped me, is thinking about like, what did little Carly, what was she confused by, and what were her problems, and what would have really helped me move to where I am now a lot faster if I'd had this in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you find that branding a company is more difficult to do from a personal branding perspective, or from like, if it's like a nonprofit, or if it's like an established company or something like that? Do you find that it's different in that way, or is it similar or more difficult, less difficult? Is there nuances in how you would approach branding if someone came to you and said, hey, I have a nonprofit that I'm trying to develop a brand for, versus, hey, I have a personal brand that I'm trying to do?
Yeah, I think I would. You really do still approach them in much of the same way, where you're still thinking, who is this person that I'm trying to help, and what do I offer to help them get there? But the main difference would be that with a personal brand, with someone who uses their name or their face as the presence of the company, we do a lot more work around like, what things do you like, and who are you? What are you about? Where if it was a bigger organization that didn't have necessarily one face leading the way, then we would want to look more at like what is the mission of this company in relation to this one person? So it's still kind of a lot of similar questions, but it's more about what the organization's goals and characteristics are, and less about like, I like chocolate and I live in Chicago, so I can talk about chocolate in Chicago. But at the same time, like, when you're looking at if it was a nonprofit organization, they still can say like, we exist in Chicago, and here's cool things about our neighborhood. So there's still personal connection points to be made. It just kind of comes across in a different tone of voice.
Yeah, that's so true. This has been absolutely amazing. I'm going to pivot completely. Before I have like a couple rapid fire questions, fun, like random questions that I ask people at the end of every interview, like a fun little game. But before we get there, tell people where they can find you and all your social medias and stuff like that.
Cool. Yeah. So I am CarlyChamberlick.com. I'm Carly Chamberlick on Instagram, and I am Hey Carly on other things. So I'm Hey Carly on Clubhouse. I'm Hey Carly on Etsy, but I link everything. My main presence is on Instagram, so you can kind of find everything linked there. And then also everything is linked in my website as well.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So we're going to dive into some fun rapid fire questions if you're ready for them.
Yes. Bring it on.
All right. Good. Okay. So if you could be any animal, what would it be?
Koala. Well, you know what? I don't know why I said that, because koalas are like the dumbest animals of all time. I learned that recently. Like literally the least intelligent animals of all time.
I was going to ask why.
I just think they're really cute. But then I was really disappointed because I learned from TikTok recently that an animal is like more intelligent if they have more ridges and grooves in their brain, but a koala's brain is like perfectly smooth.
Really? Oh my God, that's crazy.
I don't know if that's true. I learned it on TikTok. So
fair. I feel like half the stuff you learn on TikTok is true and the other half is just like nonsense someone put out there and you're like, wow.
Oh my gosh. I love TikTok so much. I wish I was a TikTok creator, but I'm not. I just like scrolling and looking. Yeah.
Same. I have aspirations to become one because it's such a fun platform for me, but for me to consume, not necessarily to create on there.
Yeah. I'm not a Gen Z dancer. So
yeah. No. Same. Okay. What is your favorite summer activity since you will now be permanently in the summer down in Arizona?
I know. I mean, normally it would be like flying around and going on vacations and stuff, but probably it's, and oh man, life is so different in Arizona too. It's gonna be like living in an oven. So
yeah,
I would just say being outside in general. Like I just love, especially in Chicago, like the only great months to be outside are in the summer. So pretty much like June through August is awesome. And the rest of the year is pretty cold most of the time. So yeah, just any time that I get to like go outside without a jacket right now is awesome. But I think in Arizona, it's going to be a different life where you don't really want to be outside in the summer. So we'll see what that looks like.
Right. We'll postpone that question.
Yeah.
What's one of the things that you would put on your bucket list, or what's one of the things you have on your bucket list if you have one?
Yeah, one of the things at the top for a long time has been learning how to fly a plane. And actually, I recently updated my bucket list. Let me see. I'm just going to pull it out.
I love that you have it physically ready. Like
I have
right
my
there.
Planner ready to go. And I put everything in here. What's funny about my planner is I have a planner that has like a month layout and then just blank pages, like literally nothing else in here.
Love that actually.
Cause I don't like getting tied to like day.
Yeah. Me neither.
Things. So me neither. I have my scheduled appointments like this recording are in my Google calendar, but everything else is just, I just have like this notebook full of lists basically. So yeah, I've got recent goals are learn to fly a plane, build a house, own multiple short-term rentals like Airbnbs.
Yeah.
Basically, I want to have a house in, I think I want to buy a house in Arizona because we're just going to be renting an apartment, but I want to buy a house there and I want to build a house at my parents' property in Tennessee. They have a bunch of like wooded property out in the middle of Tennessee. So I want to build a little something out there so I can visit them and have my own space. And then I've always wanted, this is actually probably the biggest, longest term one, is that I have always, ever since going to France for the first time, I've wanted to have an art studio in France. So that's been like my biggest one. I think my bucket list kind of changes constantly because I'll look back at it sometimes and be like, I don't really care to do that actually.
But I like that because those are all tangible things that are seemingly accomplishable. A lot of times people have like crazy things or like things that aren't of any worth really on their bucket list. Like people want to say like, I want to jump out of a plane, which is awesome, but it's not really like a tangible, accomplishable thing that's going to help you in the future. So that's really cool that you have, first of all, really cool that you have it like just listed physically out there that I need to do that. And second of all, that you just like having an art studio in France, that's crazy and awesome.
Yeah. And not just for me, to be clear, I wanted to have like a collaborative studio space to have people come and like do all kinds of different art. So have like a photography studio set up and have a painting area and have like a writer's space. So just a space for people to come like create meaningful things was kind of my idea behind it. But yeah, I'm putting it out in the universe because I actually don't talk about it that much. It's been something in my head for probably like 8 years. And but I haven't even begun to figure out how to buy property overseas. So that's the whole thing.
Okay. Couple more fun questions. If you could be any flavor of ice cream, what flavor would you be and why?
Mint chocolate chip.
Okay.
Because it's delicious. And I feel like it's a good mix of like refreshing and light, but also there's chocolate and it's just kind of like a little blend of fun flavors. There's a little bit of classic chocolate Mint is a little out there.
I like that.
A little bit of everything.
You know what's funny is I ask people these random questions and they have like these amazing quick responses. And it's like, yeah, that totally fits you. I agree.
If
you
would be somehow that like I didn't know that about me, but that was living rent-free in my head.
Apparently. okay, this is a very pointed question for you. If you could go anywhere in the world, where would you go? Like literally right now, where would you go?
Literally right now, probably Morocco, because I tried to go there after my 7 month stint of like Germany, India, Sri Lanka, Nepal, all these places, but then I was out of money by the time I go to Morocco, and I really wanted to go there, but I've never been on the continent of Africa. Like for all the travels I've done, I've never been to Africa. So I would really like to make that a priority once we can leave the US.
Yeah. Same. Actually, I've never been to Africa, and that's always been one of the places that I want to go. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Morocco for me, but for me, it'd be South Africa. Mm-hmm. That would be like the dream. I would love to go to Cape Town and see, that area.
That would be awesome.
Okay, last question, which is the question that I ask everyone, is if you had a theme song to define your life or your situation currently, what would that theme song be?
Currently?
I say currently because a lot of people get hung up when I say, like, if you had a theme song to your life, what would it be?
And they'd
be
like, that's entire life.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Like, that's a lot of pressure. probably, I don't know if this says anything about me as a person, but I've been listening to so much Post Malone that I'm like losing my mind a little bit. So, but he's also very sad and depressed. What's funny about that is probably like literally any Taylor Swift song would define my life, just because I feel like even when I've gone through hard things or have had like negative experiences, I feel like I still have this, this predisposition to be very positive, which, can be really annoying, but it's also, I feel like I could live in any Taylor Swift song and be like perfectly happy.
Yeah. I love that. I did not know that you were a Swiftie. So I'm obsessed.
Yeah. My Spotify, rewind of last year was pretty much like 50-50 Post Malone and Taylor Swift.
That's hysterical.
My inner soul.
That's hysterical. Yeah, mine last year, I do remember it was like some country, some rock, some rap, and then like the other 50% was all Taylor Swift.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think she just like she's got something for any mood that you could possibly have.
Definitely. I agree. I'm just obsessed with her as a person too, because I find her marketing techniques to be so fascinating. Mm-hmm. So literally anything that she does, I'm on board for. And there's a lot of people that I know that don't like that and hate her. My brother has a vitriol hate for her for some reason, but I'm in the opposite camp where I'm like, yes, anything Taylor does is amazing. So
I'm pretty much right there with you. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, she can literally like do anything, and I will want to hear it or see it or.
Yeah.
Know about it.
Love that. Well, thank you so much for so much time. We've spent quite a bit of time together, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, this has been really fun.
It has been.
You can make it a two-parter if you need to.
I love it. And oh my God, I want to like ask you all the things, but we'll get into that another time. So
yeah, definitely.
All right, well, have a great day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Thank you so much.